Welcome to the Looks of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the New York Jets here. We're going to have a little two-parter here. You're going to hear me for the beginning of this, and then my dad's actually going to join us. We'll see how that goes on the second half here. Haven't yet recorded that, so I'm going to record this first, and I'm talking to my dad tomorrow, and that will be Thursday, and this will come out Friday. So that'll be fun. He's for reasons that I will have to dive into with him, he is a Jets fan, and I ended up being a Bills fan, and I don't know when that happened, because I think he converted during the Rex Ryan era, and that's what we need to delve into. So you can tune into that for the second part of the show, but let's cover the Jets here in the Dynasty angle, then we'll have a little fun in the second part. I was actually surprised digging into the numbers. Like, this is a damn good situation for Zach Wilson. Like, you really don't have a ton of excuses. And I think that they actually added, like, they added redundancy too, which is, I think, pretty wild. So second year of the Saleh, Zach Wilson regime, they drafted Sauce Gardner at 4, drafted Garrett Wilson at 10. And then they actually traded up for Jermaine Johnson in the back of the first round. They traded for the 26th pick and the 101st pick. They basically gave up 35, 69, and 163. That's one trade up that they made. Then they do it again, and they move from 38. They give 146. Again, not a huge deal, but they move up two spots to get Breece Hall and jump ahead of Houston. And I keep going back to that, and it's like, all right, you gave up. So you went and got a running back. You got a defensive end who, there's some questions about. You traded up last year for Elijah Vera Tucker, an interior offensive lineman, which... He was okay as a rookie, but you've in the last 2 years you've traded up for non-premium positions. You spent top 150 picks to do so, and then the Jermaine Johnson one as well. Like, it gives me some pause when you are a team that's not. That is not good at present. When you start trading for non-premium positions, this can go poorly quickly, right? Especially trading up, moving up the board. You want to take a lot of shots, right? And like the quizzical thing about this, again, I think Breece Hall is a good player. He's a really good player, but like Michael Carter was really good last year, and you're not a good team. So, what are you doing spending a rookie contract, trading up to do so, on a running back? That gives me some pause in terms of their direction. They also got Jeremy Rucker at 101, which I think wasn't a good prospect. I'd be surprised they get anything out of him. But that's the direction that they went. So that's where they are. So that's basically some of the moves that they made this offseason in the draft. I like some of the stuff that they added too. Like they added T.J. Uzomah and Tyler Conklin. They were really bad at tight end last year. They drafted Jeremy Rucker again in the top. At the 101st pick, so just outside the top 100. So they basically had three tight ends to a team that was really a lackluster, 29th in terms of tight end routes run last year, 30th in terms of targets for the tight end position on a drop back basis, and they were 31st in terms of expected points per game from the tight end position. So really added to that. They also added Lincoln Tomlinson as a guard. We'll get there in a second on that. Lost Jamison Crowder, lost Keelan Cole, but I think by and large added to this offense. So they're moving Mekhi Becton from left tackle to right tackle. George Fant in at left tackle. Becton missed basically all but one game last year with an injury. Let's get to some of the breakdown here. And I think that I actually like what they've done. So in terms of some of the stuff they did. So they're 29th in terms of plays per game last year. Again, there was a lot of stuff in and out with Zach Wilson, but 56.9 plays per game. So that volume just needs to come up. 36.9 dropbacks per game. That's good for 22nd. 19.9 design rushing attempts per game. That's good for 27th. and then design pass rate of 61.2. They were neutral in terms of really where they threw it. 5.8 yards per attempt. That was good for 32nd, so worst in the league. A 2.5 touchdown rate, that was 30th. They were sacked the fourth most amount at 8.1% of their dropbacks. The early down neutral game pass rate was 51.3%. That's good for 15th. So bad quarterback play, not productive in the passing game, taking a ton of sacks. But when you look at some of the decision stuff, you're like, all right, like there's some positive stuff here. Also, I think some positive stuff. They, in terms of routes per dropback, they were top 10. They were ninth for the running back position, fourth in terms of running back targets. So it's a good situation for Brees Hall to come into. Wide receiver, first in terms of routes per dropback, fourth in terms of targets per dropback. Again, wide receiver routes are more valuable than other positions. So they are doing smart things by putting them out there and running more routes with them. That is a good thing. And there's some stuff, too, that suggests that three wide receiver sets are higher yards per route run type things that can artificially inflate it for wide receivers. Yeah, because it's harder to cover three wide receivers than it is to cover two tight ends, right? Or a fullback, right? Like this, yes, like that. There's more... It puts more constraints on you. That should be fairly obvious, right? In terms of that, you would rather have a third wide receiver out there than almost any other type of personnel. That is right. So the Jets do some stuff there. That's good. The red zone plays 23rd, 129 per game. They run it at a pretty high rate. 10th, top 10 in the league. They were 9th in terms of red zone rush rate, 55%. Just short of 82% running back red zone rush rate. That's good for 11th. So run it more than average. Don't get in there a lot. Run it more than average. Run it with the running backs a lot. That's a capping situation for the passing game. That would be my biggest concern there. So not a ton of volume and everything basically breaking against the passing game. That gives you some pause. 24.6 expected running back points per game. That's good for 15th. 12th in terms of wide receiver expected points per game at 37.8. 7.8 tight end expected points per game, as I mentioned before, 31st. I was actually looking at this too, and I don't think there's a ton of excuses for Zach Wilson, and they've done a good job. And honestly, if Zach Wilson fails, I don't think it, like if he fails spectacularly this year, this isn't a situation I think you hold against your front office. Right. I mean, and there's a situation where like this, that whole class could fail. Like Trevor Lawrence wasn't particularly good. Trey Lance has had some struggles. Justin Fields, like we'll see where he's at. Zach Wilson, like the answer could have been, and even though it's thought of to be like a historic class when it was coming out, the answer could be none of the above, which would be interesting. I don't think like it, even if Zach Wilson fails, assuming that there wasn't like total incompetence going on in terms of coaching him, right? They'll know more stuff than we did, but I don't think that this team structure is what will to be blamed for that. I just think that they don't have the right guy, and there could be a situation where like they took the best shot at a good guy that they had, and it just sort of broke wrong, right? And that could happen for a bunch of teams in last year's draft class. So I don't think that this is an indictment because they actually like they're pretty good, like 23rd in terms of pass blocking grade over at PFF last year. They were 13th in terms of run blocking grade. They have George Fant, who's like they have answers basically at all the positions except one, right? So that you have George Fant at left tackle, 31st in PFF pass grade at 88, so above average, good. Elijah Vera Tucker was 55th out of 90. In terms of pass block grade last year as a rookie. There are other guys there that also played, that three guys that basically played guard. The other two are basically out. They have Lake and Tomlinson they brought in, who is 11th out of 90 in terms of PFF grade. And that's, I mean, that's good, right? So that's a big upgrade there from being basically below average to well above average. And then they take Connor McGovern as well, who's 12th out of 41 in terms of PFF pass blocking grade there. And you got Mekhi Becton at right tackle. So really you've got like, you have three answers. You get a fourth pretty good shot, I think, at the in the interior. And it's even at the non-premium position, right? It's okay if it's not like a huge success. Like you just need it to be average to, you know, in the, you know, right around the middle, and that should be good given everything else you got. With Elijah Vera Tucker, you're kind of on the way there, and then you're looking for how Becton can play in the right at right tackle. And like all of a sudden, like you could have a pretty good, like you could easily have a top half, even top 10 offensive line just by basically guys playing, you know, just a little Becton playing average and Elijah Vera Tucker playing better than he played last year. All of a sudden, like you have a pretty, the looks of a pretty good offensive line. So that's some thought there. So Zach Wilson, I mean, and honestly, like for Zach Wilson, like that sort of jives with everything else, right? They've done a lot of stuff. And this is like, if you look at it, how a team develops when they have a rookie quarterback, like this is why it's such an edge. Like you can bring in Laken Tomlinson, you can bring in like Corey Davis, you can then add to Corey Davis and bring in more receivers, right? You can afford to bring in, you know, you can continue to spend because you're not spending a quarterback. You can spend Garrett Wilson, right? You can spend on Elijah Moore. Like you can, you have this embarrassment of developmental talent. You've spent all of this draft capital on supporting cast, like, and you can do that and spend money to bring guys in to help him early in his career because the contract's so advantageous. So I think they've done a good job of putting it around him. And I don't think, you know, if Zach Wilson fails, it's not for a lack of supporting cast. I think that might be the big takeaway here. He was bad last year, 36th in PFF passing grades out of 40 guys, 30th in terms of big time throw rate. Again, that's not the stickiest thing year to year. So that would be one thing that I would say, like that doesn't necessarily predict rookie season to rest of the career. So that's one thing where you look at that. I'm not super, like I'm not totally panicked about him, which is one thing. One thing that is a little bit more predictive, not a huge predictiveness, but it's got an R squared of about 10%, is the turnover-worthy play rate, 10th worst there. So again, it's not the most sticky thing from year to year, but it is more sticky than the big time throw rate. And so neither of those are great. Neither of those are good as for a rookie. So a little bit of pause there, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. There's a huge margin of error on these things. Again, his season wasn't clean either. 19.7% of the pressures he was responsible for, that's sixth worst. So if you feel like he looks like a deer in headlights a little bit, that stuff comes in play. 28th in terms of clean pocket stuff. That's in terms of PFF grade at 71.4. That's not good. 6.6 yards per attempt on clean pocket stuff, 32nd out of 40. He did have a drop rate of 12.7%. Only Taysom Hill was worse. One thing, and I don't know the answer to this, and I'm curious to ask, I'm going to ask around a little bit and see if anyone's done work on this. And if you've seen it, please let me know because I'm super interested in it. But the bottom 10 guys in terms of drop rate last year: Taysom Hill, Zach Wilson, Jacoby Brissett, Sam Darnold, Trevor Lawrence, Mike Glennon, Baker, Stafford, Herbert, Winston. So when you look at like the bad, like quote, the bad, the really bad numbers, and there's like a tier break kind of in the middle there around five or six. Taysom Hill, a converted tight end, Zach Wilson, a bad rookie season, Jacoby Brissett, like a lukewarm backup, Darnold, who's been terrible, Lawrence, who had a bad rookie season, and Glennon had like one of the worst seasons imaginable last year. And then again, there's a tier break right around there. I don't know if there's something predictive there in terms of our bad quarterbacks having balls dropped at a disproportionately high rate. I don't know. I'd be curious to look at that. I haven't looked at that, but I think that's certainly a really high drop rate. And when you look like to some of the other guys, I would say like the bottom group of guys it's not everyone that's great, right? But it's just look at the difference here. It's Kyler Murray had the lowest drop rate. Davis Mills actually is interesting. Mac Jones, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Andy Dalton, Tyrod Taylor, Teddy Bridgewater, Goff, Lamar Jackson. So again, I don't know if there's a ton there. When you look at some other guys, like you just start sort of fishing around a little bit. Mahomes is like right about the median guy. Allen's the median guy. Prescott, they all have the same number at 6.2%. Derek Carr's in the middle. Burrow's in the middle. So I suspect like there's probably you're probably looking a little bit too much into that, would sort of be my hunch. But I just thought it was notable. Like, and when you go back to 2020, you look at guys who had the highest, who had the highest drop rate. Carson Wentz, Daniel Jones, Drew Lock, Andy Dalton, Tua, Garoppolo, Roethlisberger, Lamar, Baker, and Darnold. So again, there's some stuff there where it's like, all right, like some of the not great guys. Actually, Russell Wilson's pretty high that year. When you go back and look a couple years ago, the low guys on that list, Kyler Murray, again, there's like he's there in terms of that's he throws a good ball, maybe. I don't know. Like, I'd be interested to sort of see this. But Herbert's there. Like, there is some variance there. So I'm just curious to see, like, if there isn't some stuff where it sticks year over year. You see some of the same names, but you see some other variance there. I'd be interested to see some more work done on that. But needless to say, Zach Wilson, really high number there. So, again, maybe things get a little bit better, and there's an instant boost to his numbers, right? Instead of being at 6.6 yards per attempt, maybe just his guys not dropping the ball at such a high rate, maybe that just brings him up to 6.8, 6.9, 7, something like that. Little bits can add up, and that would be one thing that I would look for. So I was actually surprised, and I'm sure I'll talk to my dad about this, but I was surprised at how good Michael Carter was last year. And like, it looks like they kind of found a solution on day three of the draft. And again, it's not a position that makes a huge difference. The fact that they then went out and addressed the position, not only addressed it, but traded a top 150 pick to move up two spots to address the position, is quizzical to me. Michael Carter, 81st in terms of expected yards per route run, 79th in terms of actual yards per route run. Like, he's the one guy that didn't have a really bad drop off from expectation to actual performance last year. So good on him for actually performing well. Everyone else kind of like had decent expectations. We'll get to that in a second. But stunk relative to expectation. Michael Carter was an outlier in that sense. So I do think he's a pretty good player. And when you look at some other stuff too, like, all right, what do you do on your own? Force missed tackles. I forced a missed tackle once every 3.77 carries. That's good for third. So again, I had questions about him coming out. He's kind of proved that he's like good. And now he's going to go back to being a backup. All of a sudden, he puts himself in a really good situation to be a good injury away guy, especially considering top 10 in terms of targets and routes per dropback. Like, those stats, like, that's good usage for him. So I'm excited for Carter as an injury away guy. I've had him actually in a trade recently, and I think I drafted him too, like into the 40s, late 40s, into the 50s even. Like, that's a really good situation there for him. Like, he's a good player. Like, he kind of fits on the Madison spectrum of like good. You know, he's actually like him and Pollard, I think, are interesting guys comparing to one another. All right, some more stuff here. Elijah Moore was under the radar, a monster last year. 24% of his routes he was targeted on. It's a really good number. 2.19 expected yards per route run, 94th percentile. 1.75 actual yards per route run, 82nd percentile. So again, that's still pretty good. But 33rd percentile in terms of comparison against expectation, that's kind of a disaster. 89th in terms of expected points per route run. Again, some lucrative stuff there. Braxton Berrios, 22.8% of his routes he was targeted on, a good number. He's a sneaky monster. 90th percentile in terms of points per route run. So good stuff there for Berrios. Again, he's like a really good four. Like, you look around, you're like, all right, like, Braxton Berrios is my wide receiver four. Like, that's outstanding. Like, that's really good. Corey Davis, 20.9% of his routes he was targeted on. That's a good number. 1.74 yards per route run, top 20 percentile. Expected yards per route run is 2.0. That's 89th percentile. So again, all the stuff is good. Like, you look at the metrics, like, there's a lot of good expectation, and they just failed to meet it because Zach Wilson wasn't good. I think they're in a unique situation of, this is definitely the year. Like, you look at this team and you're like, all right, you're going to get a really good gauge. And they honestly did it in a way that, a little bit like Miami, where Miami kind of invested a lot of stuff, and they've invested stuff in Tyreek Hill now, like, they've traded picks and stuff. It was a little bit different for the way Miami done it, or the way that the Jets have done it. They've just kind of continuously added a lot of stuff, and, you know, a variety of different things, basically, on the offensive line at all of the skill positions. They've upgraded, like, more bodies. Like this is, Zach Wilson needs to take a big step, or they should move on from him. Like, that's going to kind of be where they are at, I think, after this season. So that's really the big thing there. When you look at some of the, where they are and some of the market stuff, right? So our redraft and our RDP and the like there, they have Zach Wilson 18.5 in terms of quarterback median. That's the beginning of the fifth round. Garrett Wilson's at wide receiver 23, which is interesting there. That feels a little lower than it has been, maybe trending down just a hair. But again, I'm largely avoiding those types of situations. Breece Hall, it's at running back 7. That's pretty palatable in terms of him being a pretty good profile. He's right behind Javonte Williams, which I think makes some sense right there, with Austin Eckler as well. Michael Carter, the aforementioned Michael Carter, running back 47. That's like a target player there. He's going a pick in terms of overall median. He's going to pick behind Tyler Algier. He's going right around Khalil Herbert. Hell, he's going behind TDP. When you sort of think about that, you're like, all right, like, Carter's already proven that he's a pretty good player. He's going behind Zamir White. So all these guys, like, I think Michael Carter, the takeaway from this is he's maybe the most undervalued. He might be the play in this offense. When you look, Elijah Moore, wide receiver 23. I think I'd rather have Elijah Moore than Garrett Wilson. It's close. Like, but Elijah Moore, like, kind of put it up from a, in his rookie season, like, put up pretty good numbers, 1.75 yards per route run. Like, that's a future star type numbers. Like, that's future stars in his range of outcomes. And Garrett Wilson hasn't done it yet. So they're about the same cost. Like, their median is both at wide receiver 23. They're within a pick of each other in terms of median startup draft position over at the site. I mean, give me that. Like, give me, at the cost, I think I'd rather have Elijah Moore. Definitely the pick, I would say, overall from these guys is Michael Carter. But I think if you're looking at the wide receiver position, Elijah Moore makes more sense, I think, than Garrett Wilson does at cost. Again, Corey Davis, 83rd, right? 19th round. Behind Khalil Shakir, behind Odell Beckham Jr., who's not even signed. Hell, behind Drew Lock, behind Bryan Edwards, who's not any good. Like, you look at that and you're like, all right, like, there's a guy too that has a good shot. Again, like, you put together, like, you have this is a team that has continuously addressed the position. You know, I can't say that, like, there's no excuse for Zach Wilson. They've got Corey Davis. They've got Elijah Moore. They've got Garrett Wilson. They've got Braxton Berrios. I would say if there's one thing that I have a problem with, it's that they don't have, like, a clear alpha. But they have a bunch of options, and I think that can be just as, you know, they have a bunch of outs. I was just looking at some research. I just heard some research that I need to look a little bit more into, that it's actually, like, in the playoffs, the thing that actually makes more of a difference is your wide receiver 2 and 3 as opposed to your wide receiver 1. And I can understand that as you're schemed against and the like there. I just think there's they have a lot of different answers in terms of this offense. It's all a question, again, comes back to Zach Wilson. You're going to sound like a broken, like some sort of broken, you know, recording of me. All right, so then you look here at the, some of the underdog stuff here. Breece Hall is at running back 18 in terms of his underdog numbers. So again, that's below his startup draft number, but as a rookie, you're not really super, super worried about that. Michael Carter, 46 in terms of underdog. Elijah Moore, 33 in terms of underdog. 52 for Garrett Wilson. Corey Davis, 73. So again, the rookies underperforming their dynasty ADP, which is really no surprise. Zach Wilson, 24 in terms of positional rank there. Outside the 30s there for Uzoma and Conklin. Braxton Berrios outside the top 100. Jeremy Rucker, 54 in terms of underdog stuff there. So, again, I think my bets here, I think the most interesting bets are Michael Carter in that 40s range. Again, because I think he's shown that he can play, and I think the payoff could be better maybe than we appreciate to him. And I think between Elijah Moore and Garrett Wilson, give me Elijah Moore. I think Corey Davis super deep is interesting. And again, Berrios is more like, hey, we're going to monitor from way afar. And if there's multiple injuries, like, he's a priority waiver wire guy. If he's going to get, like, you know, 70-80% route participation, like, that could be really, really interesting. So that's a breakdown there of the Jets. Again, I hope you hang around for the second part of this, where we'll talk to my dad and we'll see sort of where that goes. But until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon. Okay, welcome back to the Analytics of Dynasty podcast. I am joined for the second part of this Jets edition by my dad, making his first time arrival. So we've had a couple of guests here and a couple more down the hopper, but bringing my dad on and to talk about the Jets. And I have some questions about the Jets for you, Dad. And okay. So thanks for joining us.
For having me.
How long have you had been a Jets fan?
Since 1970.
How did I become? So growing up, I was, so that's obviously well before I was born, and that would be the NFL merger. My recollection of my NFL fandom was we always watched Bills games.
That's true. We did, because the Jets were not in our market. For some reason, the Jets games are not played and the Bills games are played in our market. So we always watched the Bills games, and the Bills would be my second favorite team.
Okay, so I went through... So this is funny to me because I went through my entire childhood thinking like you were a Bills fan first and foremost. And then it became like clear to me later on, like probably I would say like the Rex Ryan Jets years, right? When the Mark Sanchez era of the Jets actually being competitive. And of course the Bills went forever without making the playoffs. That's when I thought you sort of converted more first and foremost, but I didn't realize that it was actually the access to the games that was what the difference was to you.
It always was. So when I was young, I liked the Jets, and the Bills weren't that good, and the Jets used to be on all the time. But then when the Jets stopped winning, and I don't know what it is, right about where we grew up is kind of the line for some reason. But I always did like the Bills, even when the Bills weren't good back in the day when before you were born. The Bills were kind of like the Jets have been recently.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And I mean, they were bad for a while. I remember. So it's funny because the first time the Bills made the playoffs was we in forever was actually it was ended up being New Year's Eve. I don't know if you remember this, but it was New Year's Eve and you were watching Gracie, who's up my oldest. And we were bringing her over because Sarah and I were going out to dinner on New Year's. And that was the that was the game the Bills won. And then it was the Andy Dalton comeback win. And the Bills actually made the playoffs for the first time in forever. And I joked that, that Gracie has never known the Bills being bad because it was the day that she was actually born that weekend was the Nathan Peterman 5 interceptions in the first half game for the Bills. And then they went to the playoffs later on, and she's never really known being bad. So it's funny your sort of journey through it, because I didn't realize your Jets fandom as we were younger. Cause I always remember like the thing, like my first NFL fandom memory was the Bills Houston Oilers game when they came back from way down, and we were actually in my
Oh,
grandmother's basement watching it, and it
yeah,
was
I remember
me
that.
and and I remember that being the comeback. But it's funny that I didn't realize the whole time that you were actually an imposter Bills fan. So
Yeah, no, I'm still a Bills fan. It's just when they play together is the only time it's a struggle.
All right.
But
So
my favorite players when I was young were Joe Namath from the Jets and O.J. Simpson from the Bills.
all right. Well, one out of two making it this far isn't bad. So that's good. We probably won't talk OJ. We won't talk Ray Lewis either.
We're
Which is
fast too.
spent the entire the better part of my childhood listening to you not liking Ray Lewis, which is always fun. But so what's your so where are you sort of at with your Jets experience now? So like you guys were good and actually a good foil to the Patriots there and 10 years ago in that sort of in the Sanchez era, and it's been sort of in the wilderness since. Where are you sort of on an optimism versus frustration scale right now?
Well, as a Jets fan, every year you're optimistic it'll be a different year. So, I'm kind of used to that. But this year, I think this year's a little bit different. I think it's different, at least for me. I think they had a really good draft. I was very happy with the picks. I thought they picked people that they needed. I thought they picked good players. It's our second year with, Wilson as the quarterback. So I think that's good. They did get him a couple weapons, and he's not just trying to do it all on his own. So I'm optimistic. I mean, I don't think I'm foolish enough to believe they're going to make the Super Bowl, but it would be nice if they would at least be better than 500. And I think their coach is really good. I think they've got the right attitude right now. And the last couple years have been sort of building years, but I mean, last year I think was the beginning, although the record didn't show it. But I think with the new people they added, I think we got a chance this year to win some games.
So we went to lunch yesterday, and then I was preparing for the show, and I didn't know what I was going to find in my preparations, but I'm optimistic about the Jets. I got to tell you.
Wow.
So let me tell you why. So
Okay.
they're plus, so their odds are really bad. They're plus 2400 to win the division, which is the worst odds of any team in the league to win the division. So that's not great, but that has to do, I think, with a couple of things. First, the Bills are very good, and well, that's pretty much it. The Bills are really good, so there's a big divide there. And then they're no one thinks they're quite that good, right? But they're actually plus 710 to win. So basically a one out of eight shot to get to the playoffs, so about 12%. I am thinking about betting them, and I was interested in looking at their team because there's some fun stuff. So, and I did this for the pod already, but I'll give you the rundown here of why I'm optimistic. So if you look at their offensive line, it's actually pretty good. So last year, let's see here. So last year, their offensive line was 23rd. However, that was without their left tackle Mekhi Becton, who played one game, and Elijah Vera Tucker, who was their first round pick last year, was a rookie. But if you look what they did, they're getting Becton back and they're moving him to right tackle, which is probably a better position for him. They're putting Vera Tucker back at guard. They have Connor McGovern as their center. They got Laken Tomlinson, who was a top, who was the 11th best guard according to Pro Football Focus last year out of 90 qualifiers. And they've got Becton on the right-hand side. You can make a pretty good argument that they're an above-average offensive line.
And they also have that Fant guy who played last year, right? Didn't he take Becton's spot? And
Yep. So
they're
he's going to
leaving
play
him at
left
the
tackle, and
left,
he was an above
right?
average left tackle. He's an above average tackle. So
Yeah.
that's, I think, a good, so you have a good line.
Yeah.
you have weapons everywhere, and you have redundant weapons too. So you went out last year and got Corey Davis, who we like. Maybe isn't a star, but we like him. Elijah Moore was really good last year for a young wide receiver, for a rookie. He definitely popped and is on a positive track. And then you drafted Garrett Wilson in the top 10. That, in addition, you had one of the worst tight end situations in the league last year. In terms of using your tight end, you used them the third fewest per drop back last year, which was they ranked 30th in terms of targets per drop back last year. But you went out and you actually triple addressed the position. You have Tyler Conklin, CJ Uzomah, and you drafted Jeremy Rucker in the third round. Now, I have questions about how good Jeremy Rucker actually is, but at least you sort of are addressing the position. Then my concern with the Jets draft has been that they like to trade up for guys at non-premium positions and spend draft picks to do it. So they did that with Vera Tucker last year. They traded up for him, or not, they traded up for him in the 2021 draft. And they did the same thing with Breece Hall this year. But you have good running back. Michael Carter was good last year. You add Breece Hall to him. Then all of a sudden, what you have is functional tight ends, which you didn't have last year. A really good set of wide receivers. You might not have a star receiver, but you have a bunch of good ones. And Braxton Berrios is your fourth. You're hard pressed to find a better fourth wide receiver than Braxton Berrios in the league. And you've got running backs, and you've got a plus offensive line. The only thing you don't have is a quarterback. And you have a
No,
quarterback, and this is where he is. Right?
that's not true. We got a quarterback.
He exists. We don't know to the level of quality with which he exists yet.
He has to step up. He's got to make a huge step up from last year. Yes.
All right.
But there's where my optimism lies. And he has a good backup quarterback, somebody that's very experienced that can work with him, and that's Flacco. So, and they just signed this Strieveler. I never really heard of him, but I know they just signed him the other day. And then they have Mike White, who, when he had a chance last year, he played pretty good. So, but I think the jury's out on Wilson. There's no doubt about that. But I think part of it too is he didn't have anybody to throw to. He didn't have people protecting him. And without that, I don't care how good you are, you're running for your life instead of running to make it, into being able to make a play. So, but I got to tell you, the thing I think that really has got my fingers crossed is defense. Because last year the Jets were like, I don't know the statistics because I don't look at them that hard, but I think they were like dead last in every category almost, including points allowed. And that was the problem. If the Jets put up 21 points in a game, you knew they were going to lose, so because they were giving up 30. So I think, and I'm, once again, it's wishful. We haven't got too far into the season yet, since I think it's the second day of practice. But I like that Johnson that they drafted, Jermaine Johnson. I mean, obviously, everybody's really big on Sauce Gardner. Time will tell. Can he step up and be as good in the pros as he was in college? Obviously they got CJ Mosley, and they've got some other, pretty strong people coming back. Michael Carter the second. It's not often you have two
Two Michael
players with
Carters
the
on the same
same,
team.
Yeah. And if Wilson to Wilson hookup would be nice once in a while too.
That's not bad either. That's not bad
That's not
either.
bad neither. So
That is, that
I
is.
think I think they tried to address. I mean, their coach is a defensive guy,
Yep.
so I kind of got my fingers crossed that they can fix that problem. Because if they can reduce the amount of points they give up, then it gives them a chance to win. But when you're giving up 30 points every game, it's very hard. I mean, you got to score 31 points. I mean, you just got to score, basically four touchdowns and a field goal just to win the game, instead of being able to hold the other team to something respectable. So time will tell.
Yeah, no, and I'm with you, and I was actually more optimistic as I was sort of looking at it. And I do think that they have a decent Like it's they're swimming, but if you start painting this again, the problem is the AFC is so hard, right? That's their
Right.
problem right now. Like the I don't know, four of the top seven or eight teams in the AFC are in the AFC West, right? And they're playing in the team and they're playing in the division with the Super Bowl favorites, right? That's swimming upstream. The AFC North is pretty good. The AFC South kind of sucks. But you could make an argument that they could be like if I don't know if the winning, I think the winning the division's a little far, but you
Yeah.
could make an argument that they're the second best team in the like in the division this year. Like they take some actual like their defense actually takes a step forward and Zach Wilson plays. I mean they're doing exactly what they should do for a quarter for a rookie quarterback though. Like they have a huge like this is the premium team build. They just keep putting guy they it's so cheap to have a rookie quarterback on a rookie contract and you can just keep putting guys around them.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. And it's interesting because everyone in the NFC, the AFC East, except the Bills, are in that situation. Mac Jones is on a rookie deal, Tua is on a rookie deal, and Zach Wilson's on a rookie deal. And so that arms race there against sort of the Bills will be interesting here over the next 24 months. But yeah, I'm interested to see if Zach will like I think like if Zach Wilson if you get to next year and Zach Wilson still has question marks about him, like if he plays maybe a little bit better than he did last year, like what do you think about them drafting someone again?
Well, I guess we have to wait to see how he does this year. At the beginning of last year, he was a rookie and that showed. But at the end of the year, I think the last, I can't remember, it was 4 or 6 games, he played pretty good. He was starting to get, I think, more comfortable. It's a different game in the NFL. It's a lot faster, and you're playing against people that's what they do for a living, and it's a whole different ball game than college. And I think he just ha I hope over the off season he spent time studying. He spent time studying the defenses that he's going to see. I was watching a show just the other night. There's a the Jets have a kind of like a 5-part series, and they were kind of breaking it down, kind of. And he was being interviewed, and he was showing, like, I tried this play at the beginning of the season, and I didn't see everything. But by the end of the season, all of a sudden, I'm seeing all the different things. And that just comes with, facing defenses and getting used to having, 11 people chasing you and running around for your life,
Sure.
and at the same time, trying to be able to think. And also just getting comfortable with your offense, knowing what your players are going to do. I'm optimistic. I don't know. The Jets haven't been very successful at quarterbacks recently. And, I guess we as a Jets fan, we're always hoping this is the one. This is our next Joe Namath. And that just hasn't been so for a while. But I see a lot of promise in him, a little bit more than Darnold. I just didn't think Darnold was that good at finding the open receiver. I do think Wilson finds the open receiver. Time will tell if he can do it on a week in and week out basis.
Yeah. So I went back and I looked. So since week, so he was out. So he played weeks one through, and I think he's had a week six bye. So he played six out of the first 7 weeks and then he was out. He basically missed that time in the middle. And then he came back. And when he came back, so the first game he was back was week 12 against Houston. And he kind of laid a dud, 14 for 24, threw for 145, couple interception. Not really much to write home about. It was a pretty lackluster performance. But after that, and then so that's week 12. And then the last game of the season was the Bills, and the Bills just kind of ran him over. But in that middle 5-game stretch there, he played pretty well, actually. He didn't, it didn't necessarily pop in terms of like touchdowns or big yardage or anything, but he had a pretty good reduction in his like he was playing very risky at the beginning of the season and he had a big time drop in some of the like his turnover worthy plays, which is kind of like your danger stuff there. And you know he ends up being in that stretch he's plus. He's on the he has four touchdowns and one interception during that stretch. Again, it's not great numbers, but I think if you sort of look back and you're like, all right, at the beginning of the season, he was just putting the ball in harm's way constantly. Right. And maybe the game did slow down for him sort of at the end of the season. And, you know, and I think he's like, I legitimately think he has good reinforcements. Like they have done a good job to put the ball, like to put people around him that can help him. I was just peeking here too. Like he's got to get rid of the ball faster. He holds on to the ball forever. Like he holds on to the ball for more than 3 seconds per drop back, which is, I think it's the, it's one of the top two or three in the league. Like he's got to get rid of the ball faster. And I think if he sort of does that stuff, there's like this team is actually suited to be better than maybe we give him credit for.
And part of that though too is, well, first of all, it's coaching, and I'm assuming the coaches are telling them the same thing you're telling them, or you're saying, and that you'd be telling them, get rid of the ball. But I think it also has to do with the other things you were talking about. If you don't have a tight end that you can go to, if you don't have a receiver, and I know some people are on Garrett Wilson. Some people are good, thought he was a great pick. Some didn't. Once again, time will tell. But you don't have to be huge to be the go-to guy. We've seen that New England. We've seen that a lot of these like scat back guys. The guy that can get open and the guy that just connects with the quarterback, and they make a team. And you know, and I think now he's got that. He's also like, he's got another running back, so everything doesn't fall on Carter all the time. So I think they've given him some more help, and so this year it's going to be on him. You know, he's going to have to step up and make those plays because he's got people to make them with.
Plus,
he's got a line to protect him too. You know, it's, you know, when Becton went down, I mean, you know, he was first round pick,
right?
You know, and it's, you know, it's hard when you, you know, this franchise puts all that time into somebody and then he gets hurt right out of the gate. And, you know, so I just, you know, hopefully no one gets hurt. Everyone, well, they're going to get hurt, but no one gets hurt really bad. And they can protect them, give them a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more optimistic than I thought I was going to be. So I will say that, like, again, it's all like, I think he's well situated if he takes a step forward. I don't know how much you've paid attention to what he's been doing in his off season, but
there's been a little controversy. Yes.
I'm not sure it's been like, I don't know if him and Kyler Murray have been hitting, like pounding down the walls to the film room or anything, but we'll see. So hopeful there, maybe it spurs on his confidence. All right, let's do a little pivot here away from maybe this year. Let's do some more historical stuff.
Okay.
So question from the chat, favorite Jets quarterback, some suggestions, Ken O'Brien, Neil O'Donnell, or Chad Pennington of recent. Oh, and actually we have a Chad Pennington fantasy story too, as well. He was one of our early fantasy football quarterbacks on our team.
He was. And he would be my pick of all those quarterbacks. I like Pennington. Obviously my favorite's Joe Namath.
Right. The it's funny. I look back at the, so we started playing fantasy together. And I don't remember. So I the best that I can remember, it was either 1996 or 1997. And then we've been basically, and then a couple of years in, and I believe it was, I think it was either 99 or 2000, whatever the second year of Peyton Manning's career was the year it actually became a keeper league. And it was actually, it's funny because it was actually much more dynasty back then. I think we kept 10, maybe 11 or 12 guys, and it has since pared down. You're not in that league anymore, but it has since pared down to seven, but it was very, and it was a 16 team league. So it very much felt like dynasty, and now it feels more keeper-ish to me because I'm used to playing a little bit deeper dynasty. But Pennington was a key guy for us early on, and we actually had him and Mike Vick for a nice period of time, and then that went.
And Marshall Faulk was our running back.
Yes, Marshall Faulk carried us to a championship. That was actually pre-PPR. Remember, that was actually before, like, all the scoring was awesome for a guy like Marshall Faulk, because it was actually double. Like, you would, if he was a running back, so if you caught a touchdown pass, you actually scored double the points.
Double the points, yeah.
It was just it was like crazy land. So him and like they're like if Mike Vick ran in a touchdown, it was double the points.
Right.
I mean, it was just it was crazy. It was and we would spend and it's funny because now like I can find out what's going on in, you know, Australia football like in at the tip of my fingers. Back then, we had to wait to the next day and actually print out an Excel sheet to actually do the.
Right. you kind of forget, but back then it was dial-up internet.
Right. Right. I don't know if you remember this. The there was a draft we had, and we drafted that league in our neighbor's garage. That's where the draft was held every year.
Yeah.
And someone actually had to go to Blockbuster and get an AOL CD. I don't know if you remember this, but there was an
actual, I do remember that. Yes, I
had
do.
To go to Blockbuster to get an AOL CD. And it's like, if you're newer to like life, you're like, all right, first of all, what's a CD? What's AOL? Right. And what the hell's a Blockbuster? You know, it's
what's dial up too?
right. Well, why didn't you just use your phone? It's like, well, we didn't have those either. But it's funny because that's only, I mean, that's 20, a little over 20 years ago. You know what I mean? It's just so funny that. But it would take us an hour plus the day after. Like I know I play in 30 leagues and I know by the time I wake up on Monday morning, basically how I'm going to do in a given week. And we played in one league and would have to like scramble to do it before by hand before we went to either school or work the next day. It's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. So that's Chad Pennington. So he's your favorite. Let's see what else we have here. Oh, this was a funny one. So I don't know. You didn't watch Friends, but apparently there's a joke from Friends that that no one actually knew what Chandler did for work, and so they want to know what I actually do for work. What you think I actually do for work?
This, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. That's good. that's you got it. We talk into a microphone and then people listen. That's it. That's right. What's the chance we can get you actually in a dynasty league?
Probably not. You know what happened at the end was I did not enjoy watching football anymore because I was no longer rooting for a team. I was always rooting for players. And then I found myself like rooting against my teams that I wanted to win. So probably not, because I like right now, you know, I watch, you know, games for fun, but I'm not like squeezing for somebody to do good, and I'm not getting mad if they drop the ball and that kind of stuff. So that's I kind of more comfortable just being a fan now and not the fantasy stuff.
So we have a solution for you.
Okay.
It is that instead of playing one team, it's play 30.
Okay.
There's just two, you can't care about it. And it's just, you know, you just let the process play itself out and you just sort of look it up the next day and see how you did. So that would be our solution for you. We can sort of, we'll integrate you back in, you know, we can get you in the group chat and we'll steer you right. And, you know,
all right.
But we're here for you if you want to take the plunge, and we'll just, you know, the difference between one, then two, and then 30 leagues isn't very much. We'll get you right there. And it'll just inoculate to you to any specific concerns about any specific players at any given time. And you can still root for your Jets. It'll be good.
Well, you know, as you used to criticize me all the time, I used to draft people because I liked them.
Correct.
That's just the wrong way of doing it.
So we've learned from that. So it's funny. This is one of the funny stories that I have. The long lasting memories that I have involve Willie Parker. And so Willie Parker. So we have to take a step back. So the league that you and I were co-managed, it was our team together. We every year the draft was always the Sunday of Labor Day.
Right.
When I went to college, that was the not initiation, but you know, whatever the welcoming week, the first weekend,
right.
Right. And so like I couldn't, you know, I had to do, you know, icebreaker events and all that stuff. So I couldn't go to the actual draft, nor could I draft online.
Right.
And so I, you drafted. and you drafted Willie Parker with
I
like it was like
did.
a top eight pick. Like you drafted Willie Parker, and it was an awesome pick. It was an awesome pick. And then,
Didn't think so.
well, no, I did that first, and then, but it was like after it was one of those things where it was like it felt like it was like the NBA draft, where it was like after a tier break, and you're like, all right, there's like. You know, there's like, I don't know, a handful of guys here. It's like that, you know, there's a clear, really good ones, and then there's a whole bunch of uncertainty. And in that league, you're just trying to get stuff that helps you in year one. So you're like, you drafted Willie Parker, and then you committed the we committed the mortal sin with Willie Parker, which was we got him right, and then we fell in love with him. And then we didn't, we got an offer one time, and I still remember this. And this is probably my biggest fantasy football mistake. But there was someone that was a Steelers fan in the league, and he offered us two first round picks, two future first round picks, and Maurice Jones-Drew, who was a rookie at the time, for Willie Parker. And it was one of those things that would have been like a, it would have like changed the course of the history of the league.
Who was
And we
that,
said no.
Sal? Was that Sal?
No, it was a different
No,
guy.
I
It was
wasn't.
this guy Toby, but
Oh,
he
Toby.
but it would have changed the course of the league, and we're like it, and I couldn't convince you to do it,
I know.
and we kept Willie Parker, and you know we ended up we got a championship along the way, but
We did.
that was our biggest mistake, I think, along the way. It was funny because I went back and I looked at it, and it was
I traded away a couple players I shouldn't have traded, so that's why I would get trade. I used to, I got a little nervous of trading because I traded a couple players I shouldn't have traded.
See, the solution to that is just trade more. You know, just
Okay.
got to get right back on the thing. And you know, I can tell you, do you want to know how many, this is one of those things like you never tell your wife how much your golf clubs cost or anything like that. Do you want to know how many trades I've made since let's see, since the beginning of the year?
How many?
Actually, it's not as many as I thought it was going to be. I actually just looked it up. I got a tracker. I have 43, but that means that I have to go back and look because I don't actually think that that's true. No, it's just an existing link. It's got to be more
Don't
than that.
forget,
And
I
then,
traded Randy Moss, which was, I think, the worst trade I ever made. I
yeah.
traded him away. A lot worse than not trading for Willie Parker.
Yeah, well, those things happen. Those things happen. Actually, in the last calendar year, I've made 79 trades.
Wow.
So we yeah, and there's that doesn't count startup drafts either. So, and I made a couple today actually. So yeah, I mean we'll get you back in there. You know, we'll get you, we'll just jump you right from 1 to 30 and you'll be fine. We'll just like it's on autopilot, it'll be good. All right, well that'll so again what we're optimistic about the season. Maybe not necessarily playoff push, but maybe a playoff push. I think swimming upstream, but we'll see. If Zach Wilson's good, they could be better than I think they could surprise people. And that's what your hope is, right?
That's absolutely my hope. And we'll probably have a pretty good idea when we go to the Jets Bills game in November.
Yes, and it's funny because the Jets played the Bills a couple years ago, and that would have been 20. It had to have been 2019 because it was before COVID,
Before COVID.
and the Bills came back in a one, and
You had to
it was a
remind me, didn't
Josh Allen game.
you?
It was a good Josh
Yes.
Allen game, and it was before Josh Allen was like top three quarterbacks in Dynasty. But yes, we are going back again this year, and this one's in November. So we've done the like December trip, we've done the September trip. Now we get a little bit more moderate weather there, so it'll be
Well,
interesting.
we did the Syracuse Notre Dame November trip. That wasn't too bad, but that was in Yankee Stadium.
That was in Yankee Stadium. Remember the what was the when was the game the Jets where we were like outside and it was like 3 degrees outside? It was must have been it was before that. It was it after now it must have been before that. It must have been 2018.
Yeah,
Did they play
we've went
Dallas one year?
twice.
I don't
Yeah, the
remember.
first time they played, yeah, the first time they did, it wasn't a Bills game, remember? We went on the
Yeah.
field and held the
That's
Jets
right.
flag that
That's
year.
right. That's right. That's right.
It
And then they
might have been Dallas.
yeah. And then no, you know what game that was? That wasn't Dallas. It was a Saturday night game, and they played. I think they played Tennessee, They played Jadeveon Clowney. That's who they played. Because I remember seeing Jadeveon Clowney, because he was enormous, and I thought like I'd never seen someone that big in person before. And it must have been, I think that was, he was in Houston. It was in Houston. Yeah,
It was Houston. Yep, it's absolutely it was Houston.
he
Yeah.
was in Houston. Yeah, that's right. I couldn't remember if it was when he was in Tennessee, but he was in Houston because he was enormous. And yeah. So Bills this year. So it'll be it was Jadeveon Clowney's last year in Houston, actually. So all right, cool. Well, Dad, I want to thank you for coming on and joining this. And we still haven't gotten an answer to what we do other than this. So that's fun.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's been
I
fun.
appreciate it. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode. We are working our way through the AFC East, and we will be finishing up the AFC here over the next couple of weeks as we head on into the end of training camp. That'll do it for this edition. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.